from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, the campaign is red hot. Early voting and big change. Rape and abortion are back. Hurricane Sandy on the move. President Obama raced through the swing states and hit the GOP hard after fresh talk of rape, God, and abortion. Told women in Tampa he'd stand up for their rights.
As we saw again this week, I don't think any politician in Washington, most of whom are male, should be making health care decisions for women.
Mitt Romney traded his plane for a bus and blazed across Ohio. He told voters in Cincinnati that he had what the president didn't, big change.
Do you want real big change in this country?
Yeah.
Well, you're going to get it on November 6th. You're going to make it happen. We're going to get America on track again.
And the man who talked God and rape in Indiana, U.S. Senate candidate, Tea Party-backed, Romney-endorsed Republican Richard Murdoch. No abortion, he said, even in the case of rape.
Life is that gift from God, and I think even when life begins in that horrible situation of rape, that it is something that God intended to happen.
This hour, On Point, our weekly news roundtable with Molly Ball of The Atlantic, Christina Bellantoni of PBS NewsHour, and On Point news analyst Jack Beattie. You can join the conversation. What do you see unfolding on the home stretch to Election Day? On big change, swing states, God, rape, and abortion, are you bracing for Sandy? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from Washington is Molly Ball. She covers national politics at The Atlantic, was in Florida this week at the foreign policy debate and on the campaign trail. Molly Ball, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
And from Washington, Christina Bellantoni, politics editor at PBS NewsHour, formerly at Roll Call. Christina, welcome back to you as well.
Great to be here.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beattie joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Molly, and Christina.
All right, let's listen to a little more of that sound on the campaign trail. They are all over the place this week. The bus, Air Force One, in high gear. This was yesterday. Cincinnati, Ohio, Mitt Romney hit the big change theme again and again, telling voters that President Obama doesn't have a plan and doesn't know what the nation needs.
The Obama campaign doesn't have a plan. The Obama campaign is slipping because he's talking about smaller and smaller things, despite the fact that America has such huge challenges and that this is such an opportunity for America. And that's why on November 6th, I'm counting on Ohio to vote for big change.
Big change, that change word in the air again 4 years after President Obama used it big yesterday in Tampa. President Obama, in the midst of his two-day whirlwind tour through eight states, told voters he was ready to keep on going until he got their vote.
You notice my voice is getting a little hoarse, but I'm just going to keep on keeping on. Until every single person out there who needs to vote is going to go vote.
The president calling for that vote yesterday. All right, Christina, Molly, Jack. Christina, I'll come to you first. Where does this race stand? The polls have some with Romney up, some with Obama up. It's hard for somebody on the outside to make sense of it, especially when, you know, you've got your national polls, but then we're told it's all about the battleground states. How would you describe where this race stands right now, Christina?
And don't forget that it's also all about momentum. What's so fascinating about this is this was always going to be a close race, but the president did have a mathematical advantage. When you looked at the series of all the battleground state polls, suggestions that he's winning on demographic issues, the idea that if they were able to win in the West, that was a firewall, they wouldn't have to win Ohio, all these things, you've heard all these different scenarios. Well, now it's a matter of you need to get your base voters out. And the campaigns are actually having this war over who is turning out more of the early vote versus the absentee vote. What really, really matters is making sure your people show up. And if they vote early, great, and they can help other people show up. But that's where all of the energy is focused right now. And so that's what you're hearing from President Obama. You're hearing a real push. And that's one reason why he's talking to as many people from his base as he possibly can. He's taping on Friday with MTV, talking to young voters, getting their questions answered. This is making sure that they actually show up so that there's no apathy from those hardcore, typical Democratic voters.
Molly, through the smoke and fog of the campaign, what do you see here? Who should feel more confident? Who should feel more worried with a dozen days to go?
I agree with Christina, which is not going to be very conclusive, unfortunately. I do think, you know, both sides accusing the other of bluffing or of spinning, I don't think that's true. I think both sides earnestly believe that they have the advantage at this point. I think the Romney campaign really believes that this trend is going in their direction, and there is some evidence for that. And they've always been banking on this idea that what they were going to ride to victory was not a sort of individual, incremental swing state by swing state movement, but a sort of national wave where public opinion just sort of broke in one direction and carried them to victory all across the country. The Obama campaign's theory of the case has always been that incremental electoral vote by electoral vote, very ground-based, organization-based, individual race in the individual swing states, and that's where they are still claiming that they have the advantage. And there's evidence for that, too, and I don't think that they are bluffing. I think they really believe that they are ahead by that metric. And as sort of banal and uninformative as it is to say this, it is all going to come down to who votes.
To who votes, of course, that's where it always comes down. Jack, looking across all these numbers, I mean, there's an ocean of polls out there now. And I'm looking down through the list here. You know, you've got Romney up three, Obama up two, Romney up two, tie, Obama up two. They are on both sides, but there's a slight edge in some of these overall sort of aggregations of polls here, a slight edge for Romney at the national polling level. What do you see in these numbers, Jack?
That's true. In the latest ABC tracker, he is up 3 points. Romney is. On the other hand, since October 9th, by Nate Silver's formidable poll of polls, President Obama's chances of winning re-election have risen from 61% to 73% this morning, suggesting that if anybody has momentum, it's the president. Nate Silver's model gives the president a 75% chance of winning in Ohio, an 86% chance of winning in Wisconsin, 78% chance winning in Nevada. And when you look into behind that, why is that? The president is doing very poorly among white voters generally. He's probably going to get something in the low 30s. However, in Wisconsin and in Ohio, he is in the 40s, the low 40s among white voters, white working class voters. The reason? The auto bailout. That may prove to be decisive for him.
So through all that, I mean, it's Obama's still... Could we see, Jack, the old popular number victory for Romney here, but the Electoral College victory for Obama? Is that what these polls portend?
It would seem to be, although, again, Nate Silver, who I keep quoting simply because he had the best modeling in 2008 and then again in 2010, he predicts a narrow Obama victory in the popular vote.
Is that Christina?
Yeah, and the fun thing, of course, in Washington, we're all nerds. We love this stuff. We love covering the doomsday scenarios. Of course, thinking about what happened in 2000 and the race dragging out, or even this 269-269 tie scenario. There are actually four different ways that these two men could come to a 269-269 tie, which would, of course, mean that the House of Representatives chooses the president, the Democratic-controlled Senate, which my estimation is that it will probably remain in Democratic control, will choose the vice president. This is the most fun journalists can speculate about, and of course it never happens. Generally, we end up having a result, and it's less exciting to cover.
Well, we're going to look, in fact, at that tie scenario right here on Monday and go into detail with what the Constitution lays out, how that might unfold. Mitt Romney, though, not looking for a tie. President Obama, either. Both of them out on the trail. Here was Romney in Cincinnati yesterday saying that President Obama represents the status quo, and that won't do.
The path we're on, the status quo path, is a path that doesn't have an answer about how to get our economy going, that doesn't know how to get the private sector to start creating jobs or how to build more take-home pay. The path we're on has an economy growing more slowly this year than it did last year, and more slowly last year than the year before. The path we're on has the average income of an American family down by $4,300 per year over the president's term. The path we're on does not have new answers.
No new answers, says Romney. Then you've got some endorsers coming out for the president. On the other hand, here was Colin Powell. This was CBS, Charlie Rose, saying he would endorse President Obama. This is the former Secretary of State to George W. Bush, because he's uncomfortable with Mitt Romney's changing views on foreign policy. Here's Powell.
On Monday night, Governor Romney agreed with the president with some nuances. But this is quite a different set of foreign policy views than he had earlier in the campaign. And my concern, which I've expressed previously in a public way, is that sometimes I don't sense that he has thought through these issues as thoroughly as he should have, and he gets advice from his campaign staff that he then has to adjust or modify as he goes along.
Colin Powell coming out for the president there. John Sununu, who's, of course, been big for Romney, saying, well, suggesting that there may be a race-based endorsement there, kind of controversial perspective in itself. Molly Ball, what about this notion that the president just has the status quo and the status quo won't do? What's the Obama campaign doing with that new big sound from the Romney camp?
Well, they seem to be mostly just ignoring it and continuing to make their effort against their same case against Romney, which in its own way is an argument that Romney represents, I guess, too much change. As Colin Powell was saying, that Romney himself has changed too often to be trusted. The president is making a big deal out of a trust argument. And especially now that the debates are over and people have sort of gotten to hear as many sort of specifics on the issues as they're going to get, it really does come down to trust. And those undecided voters especially care much more about these sort of character things than about individual positions.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news, the campaign down to a dozen days now, rape and abortion back in the spotlight. A big storm, Sandy, bears down on the East Coast. With Molly Ball of The Atlantic, Christina Bellantoni, PBS NewsHour politics editor, and our own Jack Beattie. Let's bring our listeners right in here. Mike in Humboldt County, Iowa. Mike, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom. I love listening to your program, how you can distill opinions down to a sentence.
Well, let's hope it's the right sentence. What do you think today, Mike?
Well, I'm an independent. That gives me the authority to slam both Democrats and Republicans. I do believe that Romney will win. Romney is the epitome of 51%. He will say whatever is necessary to garner 51% of the vote.
And does that win your vote then, Mike, or not? I can't tell which way that blow pushes you.
Well, actually, this time I feel that don't vote. It just eggs them on.
Okay, Mike, thank you very much. I'm not sure who the them is there, but I appreciate your call. President Obama picking up on this changeability case. Vice President Biden, too, as well, I guess. But this was Tuesday with the sort of phrase of the early part of the week from the Obama camp. This was Delray, Florida, president telling a crowd that Mitt Romney seemed to suffer from a case of what he has dubbed Romnesia about his earlier positions on a whole range of topics.
Last night he said he always supported taking out Osama bin Laden. But in 2007, he said it wasn't worth moving heaven and earth to catch one man. Now, we've come up with a name for this condition. It's called Romnesia.
That charge coming from lots of quarters in the Obama camp this week. Christina Bellantoni, what about it? How much movement? Is that a fair charge here that Mitt Romney, you know, had one big set of positions and now he's significantly modified them for the home stretch? Is that just what always happens?
No, it is, of course, a fair charge. Mitt Romney has shifted on a number of things, and the campaign actually sort of signaled that they'd be doing that post-primary. But at the same time, what's strange to me about this strategy, there are a few things going on.
Mm-hmm.
One, you can't necessarily call someone a flip-flopper, but then say they're the most extreme, you know, conservative that you've ever seen so far outside of the mainstream. Those two messages don't really mix, and they really are running them simultaneously on the airwaves and in their campaign messaging on the stump. So that's a little strange. And then the other thing, and I'm not necessarily speaking for the Republican National Committee here, but they have this web video out where they point out the president saying, well, you make your campaign about small things if you aren't winning with the other guy. And that's been effective for voters. I've had voters in many, many battleground states say that's the sort of thing they think about. They say, well, Barack Obama wasn't speaking like this 4 years ago. Why is he doing it now? And they look at it as petty, and that's what they tell us when we're out there reporting. And so all of those messages, it's a little strange that that's what the campaign is doing. They're also really picking up on this sort of scare you technique. You're seeing them, you know, obviously, I know we're going to talk more about the Richard Murdoch comments coming up, but you're seeing a lot of that, but also the don't be, you know, if you don't vote, you're really, you could be the one to cost us the election. And it's a very sort of scare message that you hadn't heard earlier in the campaign. And it speaks to how close the race is.
Both sides on that theme, clearly, and plenty of fear to work with in these polarized camps. Beatrice in Arlington, Massachusetts. Beatrice, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Well,
I'm calling because one of the things that I believe about Mitt Romney is that he really speaks from the gut, behind closed doors, whether it's the 47%, whether he'll say, even not so behind closed doors, if you can't afford college, just borrow money from your parents. And I believe that he really is out of touch with the average American. And then once he hears from his staff how he comes across, then he changes. Then he says, I really care about the 100%. But I do believe that from his gut is what he originally says, and I don't know what he's saying to others within the Republican Party, and then he comes across as, no, I do know, I do, I am in touch with you. Whether it's racist comments, whether it's comments about foreign politics, whether on any given topic, he's always changing because he really does believe one thing, and then he's coached to come across as a leader, as someone who knows what this country needs.
As something else you say. Beatrice, let us pick it up. Jack Beatty, politicians at this level always have lots of advisors around them saying, you better say this, you better say that. But what about in this case where, you know, here's Mitt Romney on the home stretch saying a lot of things loudly and with a kind of super optimism this week that he's got it in the bag and he wants people to know that. But what about the train of things said behind? I mean, how does politics work, Jack? Is it really the last thing said that is the thing that drives that final vote at the polls?
Well, we seem to be heading toward that, and this will be a test, this election, of that proposition. In the foreign policy debate, significant shifts in various positions, notably on Afghanistan. Just in a week, Mr. Romney shifted his position on withdrawal and whether withdrawal in 2014 would be conditions-based or not. Conditions-based a week ago, this week, no conditions. And it's this sort of thing that's led, really quite remarkably, the Salt Lake Tribune, Salt Lake City, to endorse very tepidly President Obama. Their editorial is entitled "Too Many Myths," and they say, "Who is this guy really? And what in the world does he really believe?" Beatrice says he believes what he says from his gut, but is that what he believes, or does he believe what he's saying in his moderate presentations? It's a conundrum here about Mitt Romney.
Here's the president yesterday. This was in Richmond, Virginia, saying that, look, he'll say what he wants, but these are actually old ideas wrapped up as new.
He's been running around saying he's got a 5-point plan for the economy. Turns out it's a 1-point plan. Folks at the very top get to play by a different set of rules than you do. They get to pay a lower tax rate. They get to outsource jobs. They want to roll back Wall Street reforms that we put in place to make sure we don't have taxpayer-funded bailouts. That was his philosophy in the boardroom. That was his philosophy as governor. And if it sounds familiar, it's because that's exactly what we tried in the last decade.
Don't go back, says the president. His supporters, liberals, saying yes, it may not have been a fast recovery, but it's steady. Paul Krugman saying today, a slow job is better than a snow job. But a lot of people listening to Mitt Romney at the same time. You can hear it. Marie in Mason City, Iowa. Marie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
Hi. Well, my thought is this. In the last 4 years, we have not seen the economy grow. In fact, it's gone backwards. Jobs are not coming, as the president said. And I believe he stated if things didn't improve, he should be a one-term president. Mitt Romney has proved he could turn around the Olympics and has a lot of business experience. And as an independent, I feel that's important. We need jobs. That's what's going to get this economy going. So I'm going to vote for Mitt Romney.
You're going.
And I think that the Obama campaign is just throwing a lot of dirt. I think there's been less of that on the Romney side. So what it's worth, that's my opinion.
That's where you're going. Marie, we've got it. You're going to Romney, and we've got that. I mean, Christina, you know, that there are people, well, Mitt Romney will say not enough growth. Marie says no growth. I mean, we see there's growth, but it's slow, and nobody's satisfied with it. And it feels, Christina, as though you've got a part of the electorate that just says, hey, I don't know, but this hasn't worked well enough. Let's try something different. And Mitt Romney seems attuned to that right now.
That's exactly what you hear from voters who have switched from President Obama to Mitt Romney. I talked to two different people in Virginia yesterday who were Obama supporters 4 years ago who really felt proud. They were mixed voters. One of them was a staunch Democrat. The other one had voted for both parties, considers themselves an independent. And they both had felt very good about their vote and just wanted to, you know, support him. But this time around, they feel like he hasn't done enough quickly enough and that it's time to try something different. What's interesting is both of those voters were men and their spouses are both sticking with the president and made the point that 4 years is not enough time, especially given that he had a Republican opposition for some of that time in Congress and that he had to undo some of what the Bush administration had done. So that's something that one of the reasons why you're hearing such a push for female voters, because that's the sort of mentality that the president's team is trying to tackle of, well, give us more time. We're not quite there yet. We had a giant task and we're still plugging ahead.
Oh, wow. It all depends sort of what your ears respond to when they're on the stump. Craig in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Craig, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
All this twisting with what Richard Murdoch said, it's just typical of politics. The truth will set you free. Richard Murdoch did not say that rape was the will of God. He said that conception because of rape is the will of God. And you can back that up with the 139th Psalm, verses 13 through 16. But they just twist everything.
Well, but if rape ends up in a pregnancy and some women don't think they should be required under the law to take that to term, what are they to think of the Senate candidate's remarks, Craig?
Well, they need to read the scripture and let God guide them, because this is an innocent form of life. Why should the innocent form of life be guilty for the crime of the rapist?
Craig, I appreciate your call. Let's let the Indiana Republican speak for himself here for a minute. This was on Wednesday in Indianapolis. After those remarks about that we heard earlier, it's God's intention, that pregnancy out of rape. He told reporters that he stood by his remark that when pregnancy results from rape, it is something God intended. Said he was not condoning rape, but speaking to his views on abortion law.
To twist and suggest that somehow I was saying that God approves of rape is the wrong thing, because that's not what I was saying. It's certainly not what I intended. And again, if anyone came away with that, then I apologize that they were able to make that interpretation from my less than fully articulate use of words.
On the other hand, Molly Ball, there was what he said, and it was pretty clear. And if you're looking for where the law might go here, now this, of course, Richard Murdoch is the guy who bested Richard Lugar, moderate Republican, longtime senator in Indiana, backed by the Tea Party, backed by Mitt Romney. And as he stood on that stage and brought rape and God and abortion all back into the campaign, it must have looked like some kind of a odd windfall for the Obama camp. But what about American women listening to this, Molly?
Well, it's exactly like Christina said. Women voters are really what the campaigns are fighting for on the presidential level. It's where Obama has lost the most support since that first debate, accounts for most of the advantage that or the advance that Romney has made. And so you see Democrats hitting this very, 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 very hard. There's been a lot of sort of theological discussion in the wake of Murdoch's comments about sort of free will versus fate, and I don't want to get into that, but I think the larger point is that the position that there shouldn't be any exceptions to a ban on abortion is not a mainstream position. Something like only 10 to 20% of Americans, even though possibly slim majority of Americans consider themselves pro-life, most do think that there should be exceptions, and very few think there should not. So in highlighting this, even without twisting Murdoch's words, even just by highlighting the sort of inflammatory way he depicted his support for an abortion ban that doesn't have any exceptions, Democrats are able to really highlight a lot of Republican candidates' support for this this position that's pretty out of the mainstream on abortion.
Including Paul Ryan's along the
Correct.
Way.
Correct. Right, which he talked about in the vice presidential debate, where he quickly said, you know, I wouldn't try to impose this on the country, but this is what I believe. And in a way, it's a much more internally consistent position if you do believe that life begins at conception and that any type of abortion is murder. But like I say, it's not a popular position, and it's one that does make a lot of Republicans, including the one at the top of the ticket, squirm.
No abortion, even in the case of rape. Let's go to Lauren in Richmond, Kentucky. Lauren, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
How are you?
Well, what do you think?
Well, I, before the abortion topic came up, called in just to weigh my debate on the women's issues and the social issues.
Mm-hmm.
Obama 100% stands for everything I believe in. I believe in equality. I believe in my right to every option that I can possibly have, even if I never use it. And in my opinion, even if I did believe that Romney had a better economic plan, which I do not, but even if I did, it would negate the point, because to me it's an option of being repressed and rich, or being in a poor economy and free.
Wow. Lauren, that is really interesting. How old are you, Lauren?
I'm 22.
22, and looking at it just that way, Lauren, thank you for your call. Jack, I mean, there's an Obama supporter. She wants support for women's rights, but what a kind of choice or way of putting it there. If
yeah.
You know, what for, just another word for nothing left to lose?
Yes, that sounded like it, doesn't it? You know, that big Gallup poll of last week, I think, is significant in connection to this Murdoch comment. It found that in the swing states, by nearly 20 points, abortion was the leading issue for women voters. Now, I can't imagine that the Murdoch comment and Mr. Romney's backing of it is going to help on that front, maybe, because obviously some of those people for whom that's the most important issue are against abortion.
But here's this AP poll, Jack, that says Mitt Romney has erased President Obama's 16-point advantage nationally among women.
Yes, yes, that happened in that first debate. And, you know, strikingly, the YouGov poll done by The Economist, which keeps returning to the same voters and has a kind of validity about it, found that the reason the first debate affected people wasn't that, as the reporter said, well, we had moderate Mitt. The public didn't see that, according to that poll. They saw Romney pretty much ideologically where he was before the debate. The change was on personality. They saw a dynamic person. They saw a leader. They saw enthusiasm. They saw strength. And it was on these personal measures that Mr. Romney won, and that clearly affected, in this case, women voters.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, Donald Trump dropped a big announcement, as he called it, offering President Obama $5 million to release his college transcripts and passport documents. The Late Show's David Letterman was having none of it.
Hey, Don, I'll give you $5 million if you release that thing on your head. Just let it go. Let it run free.
Activist and Native American hero Russell Means died at 72. He rallied for Native American rights and clashed with the U.S. government over the supervision of reservations, including here the 1973 armed takeover of Wounded Knee in South Dakota.
Either we force the federal government to kill us all once again like they did 83 years ago at Wounded Knee, or else they come out and they negotiate and meet our demands.
And Senator George McGovern, 1972 Democratic presidential nominee, big liberal voice, died at 90. Friends and family bid him farewell in a memorial service yesterday in Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
I am a pilgrim come through this wearisome land.
We're looking at a week in the news as South Dakota and the country say goodbye to George McGovern. The campaign now down to a dozen days. Molly Ball is with us from The Atlantic. Christina Bellantoni from PBS NewsHour and Jack Beatty's here. Thomas in Columbia, South Carolina. You're on the air, Thomas. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Sure.
What's more disturbing than the no exception for rape is this whole idea of personhood. To me, that means under the 14th Amendment, citizenship. And women are going to be forced, instead of going to so-called death panels, death courts. There's approximately a million plus ectopic pregnancies a year in this country. Many may resolve themselves, but many more, many of them require medical procedures. We're going to have a woman having to go to a judge and ask, please save my life before I bleed to death from a tubal pregnancy.
So with that, I mean, we understand the kind of fear that represents, and yet we see Mitt Romney closing the polls, at least at the moment that one was taken with women in this country after that first debate. Thomas, what do you think then about how the female vote is looking at the choice here?
They should look very closely at it. I mean, you've got the birth control issues, you have the rape, but literally, I understand that Romney, one point, tried to talk a woman out of having a medically abortion for medical reasons when the own Mormon church had granted her permission. The Catholic Church has done the same thing, and a woman is on her way to sainthood. Even though she was granted the right to have an abortion, she refused it, had a child, ended up dying because she delayed her cancer treatment.
Yeah, Thomas, I appreciate your call. Women and everybody else with a lot to think about on the way to the polls in less than 2 weeks now. Thank you, Thomas. One more, West Palm Beach, Florida. Dan, you're on.
Thank you, Tom. Great show as always.
Thank you.
The reason why I'm calling is because Bush, as you remember, gave us two big tax cuts when he came in, and he came in with a surplus. Now, Romney wants to give a tax cut again. Where's he going to get the money from? And how's that going to affect our economy? It's going to make things worse. That's one of the reasons why I'm supporting President Obama.
Dan, let us pick it up. Molly Ball, down in your neck of the woods, I mean, we've seen newspaper endorsements go all different directions, all around the country. Some that went for Obama 4 years ago, going for Romney now. Others going to the president. Your Washington Post came out, just yesterday? For the president, it was kind of it was not exactly without reservations. But they, to our caller's point, they said voters are left with the centerpiece of Mr. Romney's campaign promised tax cuts that would blow a much bigger hole in the federal budget while worsening economic inequality. They said they're going with the president on fiscal grounds, not least there, Molly.
Yeah, well, one of the things that we saw Obama do this week, and I should add that as a former local newspaper reporter myself, as much as it saddens me to say this, I don't think newspaper endorsements, especially in the presidential race, have a great degree of influence. Mm-hmm. But what we saw the president do, and I was there when he first started waving this thing around in Florida on Monday, was bring out this 20-page pamphlet about his plans, because they realized that they're being hurt by this impression that Romney is pushing, that at least he has a plan, and all the president has is a sort of like sit on his hands and hope things get better doing exactly what he's been doing for the last 4 years. Now, we can talk about whether there's any possibility that anybody can get anything through this divided Congress, but a lot of Obama's campaign has rested on attacking Romney's plans and saying they don't add up, or saying that they are not real plans, or they wouldn't work, or they would unfairly advantage the rich. But this comeback that Romney has, which is sort of, I know you are, but what am I? Or at least I have a plan, has been very effective. And I think you see at the last minute the Democrats scrambling to respond to that.
Christina, also interesting this week, this group of 100 business leaders, CEOs of some of the biggest companies in the country, the campaign to fix the debt. They're saying it's time to spend and cut spending and raise taxes, these CEOs telling Congress. What do you see coalescing there, Christina?
Voters do pay attention to stuff like that. That's one of the reasons you see Barack Obama mentioning Warren Buffett so frequently, because voters look at, you know, successful business people. That's one of the things that actually appeals to many of them about Mitt Romney, even, you know, de- it doesn't even matter how you define that, but they're looking at that and they look to that in some cases. I'd love to go back to the women point for just a moment because you know, we heard from that young woman in, I believe she was in Kentucky, a red state, and there's a very important distinction when it comes to female voters. We're not talking about single women, single young women generally. Those tend to be Democratic voters. We're talking about married women, and that's a very, very different distinction. It matters when you talk about these abortion questions. It matters when you're talking about the types of messaging the campaigns are doing. And it goes back to what you were asking about portraying Mitt Romney as a flip-flopper. Well, there's an ad that the Obama campaign did not release to the press, but that's airing everywhere, that shows Mitt Romney talking about, yes, I would overturn Roe v. Wade, that would be a good day. Yes, I would cut funding for Planned Parenthood. And the Obama team in Chicago is very confident that that sort of messaging will sway those suburban independent voters in places like Colorado, where they might not be in line with the president right now on the big fiscal issues, but they're scared that a Mitt Romney would sign something from a Republican Congress that would affect that sort of right. And so that's where the fight is really playing out. And so it's, again, goes back to that fear factor of here's what a Republican Congress would do. And, you know, going to the personhood discussion, I mean, that's happening in state legislatures across the country. So this battle is being fought on multiple fronts.
Both candidates reaching for just the tenderest, deepest levers they can get their hands on here. Lindsay in Columbia, South Carolina. Lindsay, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm actually an undecided voter, and I agree with the previous female caller of Kentucky that this election has come down to, you know, the economy versus, you know, female rights, and to me also gay marriage is an issue. And I am a young mother, and it's, to me, I'm, you know, it comes down to, am I going to be able to get a job and support my child, or am I going to have the right to do what I want with my body? And, you know, the people that I support be able to marry who they want. So I'm really not sure who I should vote for at the moment.
On the economy side, who do you have more confidence in at this point, Lindsay?
I mean, I really do think with the way the last 4 years have gone that, you know, Mitt Romney may be better at the economy just with the way he has been with, you know, his state and making jobs. I do think he may do a better job with the economy, but I do not agree with his stance on, you know, abortion and gay marriage, and I do think that he has swung far right to try to keep the Tea Party voters, and I don't agree with that.
Yeah, boy, Lindsay, it's going to be the conversation in your mind on the way to the polls is maybe the conversation that will decide this election. I mean, Jack there, Lindsay now looking at it is, can I get a job? Can I control my body?
That was almost the same lines as Lauren just earlier, and conceding the economic issue to Mr. Romney and finding a kind of nimbus of success about him that he clearly in the last weeks has been manifesting on the stump. He just looks so much more confident and at home. But, you know, he says this is going to be a big change election, and that is absolutely right. One way of looking at it, I mean, of course, promises about the economy are one thing. Their budgets and what they say, that's something else. And it's interesting. If you look at President Obama over the next decade, this according to the New York Times, will devote $12 trillion to discretionary spending. Romney, about half of that, meaning that Mr. Romney will spend 50 cents for every dollar that Obama spends on infrastructure, education, and research, among other accounts. Now, are we a stronger country spending less on those things than otherwise? That's up to the voter. But that is a clear difference. And boy, that is a big change. $12 trillion versus $6 trillion on discretionary spending.
And, of course, you've had that line of thinking that says, look, Europe went for austerity, and look where they stand right now in big trouble. On the other hand, Mitt Romney says we don't want to be Greece and turns the whole that whole picture around, tries to use it to his advantage. Sue in Windsor, Connecticut. Sue, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Just a quick point. I wanted to say that I think the Obama campaign has missed an opportunity to bill Romney as the candidate of change, since his opinion on positions has changed so much over the course of the campaign. He means big change, and it's, you know, I think they should capitalize on it and focus more on the ways that he has changed his position over the months.
Well, I mean, I hear them hitting pretty hard on that. Romnesia was the president's word, and Vice President Biden, too, talking about flip-flopping. But voters are listening. to what comes off the stump, I guess, day by day as we head toward the polls as well. Sue, I appreciate your call. One more right here. Carl in Nashville. Carl, you're on the air.
You know, we can go round and round and round about this election coming up like a cute dog chasing his tail, but it comes down to two things. Number one, trust. I would vote for John McCain 1,000 times over 1,000 lifetimes over Governor Romney. Now, I don't agree with everything that John McCain says, and of course he's a hawk, but I trust him to stand by his core principles. I trust the president to stand by his core principles. I trust Mitt Romney to stand by his core principles for 2 weeks or two different audiences. Number two, four words, let Detroit go bankrupt. That is going to effectively cost him Wisconsin, Ohio, and Michigan. There's going to be books, mind you, written about those four words for decades to come in our presidential elections. So trust and let Detroit go bankrupt are going to be the two things that sink Governor Romney's campaign.
There's a view from Carl in Nashville. Carl, thanks for your call. Molly, how about it? On the trust front, does it cut ice at this point? President Obama making much of this. And what about? Mitt Romney has said in a number of venues now, no, I didn't want the American auto industry to go down. I just wanted to do it a different way. But, you know, plenty of folks have come in and said, you know, there was no money to save them if they went bankrupt at that time. It would have been gone.
Yeah, I think the auto bailout is doing a lot for Obama in those states that the caller mentioned, but not just because of this very effective attack on Romney, but also because things are getting better in Ohio. The unemployment rate has come way down, also in Michigan, and jobs are being created in part because of the auto rescue and the fact that those companies are now expanding. There's also the class argument. You know, in these Rust Belt states where Obama has generally been doing better than nationally and in some of the western states, the 47% they've been hitting that really, really hard in their ads. And the sort of white working class voters there, who I think it was Jack mentioned before, are more favorable toward Obama than in a lot of other places. They really respond to this argument that Romney is too rich to understand their problems and doesn't care about them. Obama has an ad there, a couple ads there actually, on the theme that Romney is, quote, not one of us. And I did a lot of reporting out in the sort of Appalachian part of Ohio coal country. And even though this is a place where Obama has supposedly declared war on coal, there's a deep, deep sense that Romney does not understand their problems and is only for the wealthy. And so I think that's something that's an attack that's also been very, very effective for Obama in those parts of the world.
Jerry in Cookeville, Tennessee. Jerry, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Pretty well. What do you see?
Well, I'll touch on something real quick here before I get to my main point. Even David Letterman said Tuesday that the president wasn't telling the truth about the bailout. You can go back to the, I think it was November 17th, op-ed of the New York Times and read what Romney said, and it had nothing to do with what the president said. But anyway, it seems to me that the way the numbers are going, it seems like they're all starting to trend towards Governor Romney. And if it keeps going like this, if he wins Ohio, I would pretty much say it would be over with. And, hey, something you guys didn't touch on was Jim Moran's son, Congressman Jim Moran's son, being caught on tape talking about how to, cheat on voting, for being able to vote for places and people that you're not really, it's... Did you guys
Jerry, our time is running down, but I'll tell you, there have been stuff on... I mean, we've seen Jim Moran in Virginia, but then we've also seen, what was it, that same Republican outfit dumping, was it voter registration cards into the trash bin? I have no doubt that, especially as close as this may be, we're going to see fingers pointing and flying in all directions on that. Appreciate your call, Jerry. So here we are. It may come down to get out the vote. How does that look, Molly, those two operations?
Well, this is something I've done a lot of reporting on recently, visited field offices in a number of different states. As you recall, in 2008, Obama built this probably unprecedented grassroots organization. But now he's had 4 more years to build on that. What he's got is a world more sophisticated even than what he built in 2008. I think the Republicans have also made progress since 2008 when they really did not have much of a field operation at all. But I don't think they've caught up. I don't think what the Republicans have, which is controlled not by the Romney campaign but by the RNC, I don't think it is comparable to what Obama has built in terms of the field organization, which the sort of rule of thumb in politics is that can get you 2 points about above what you're polling. So that could be an advantage for Obama as we come down to the wire.
Well, 2 points, either camp would be very happy to have that in this neck-and-neck race. Jack, do you think the president's going to, match Romney on projecting that confidence, or does Romney just follow that sail home?
Well, he certainly has got the tone. The president, if he can recover his voice, is coming back with sarcasm, Romnesia, and that sort of thing. Whether that'll work remains to be seen.
This has been some race, and now we are truly on the home stretch. Thanks to the three of you for helping us look out across that landscape today. Christina Bellantoni with PBS NewsHour. Thank you, Christina.
Thanks.
Molly Ball at The Atlantic. Thanks for joining us today, Molly.
Great to be here.
Jack, thanks very much.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.